The Dugout CEO podcast is on the air. I'm Phil Van Horn, baseball lifer and fan of the Dugout CEO. Each week, Casey Cavell goes around the horn with baseball superstars, Hall of Fame coaches, and business leaders who've used baseball experience to win the game of life. Now batting, Casey Cavell.
Dugout Nation, welcome to the Dugout CEO podcast. Fired up about today's show. Today we have on Darren Gray, the author of The Jersey Effect, Beyond the World Championship. He is a trusted advisor to countless professional athletes and business leaders who care. He serves in sports media ministry and athletes in action and is a president of the company he co-founded. And today we're going to jump in and talk a little bit about some football, the Indianapolis Colts of all teams. But I am certain that the lessons that you're going to learn from that Super Bowl winning championship team is going to serve you wherever you lead. Darren, welcome to the Dugout CEO.
My pleasure to be here, Casey.
So let's start talking about football. I know you're a sports guy. You like them all, but you got your hands in football and some cool things that you got going on there. And we originally got connected a few months ago, and I'm like, all right, Darren Gray, I know this name. How do I know it? And I read your book about a decade ago, and then here we are. So thanks for being here.
Well, that's encouraging. You know, that little book is the engine that could. When I sat down with Tony Dungy in his hotel room, you know, it would have been 13 years ago now, going, man, I have a little idea about stitching together kind of what happened behind the scenes in the locker rooms, in the huddles, like what was going on in chapel? What were you learning about? And he's like, well, you should call Hunter Smith. And I'm like, okay, I knew him, but he's like, no, you should go sit with him. And so I did. I shared the idea. And then Hunter, a 12-year NFL pro, allowed his story to kind of be interwoven into the narrative. There's this parabolic piece to it that kind of pulls you in and then sets up, you know, little ideas like culture building ideas, like, you know, do we act a certain way? Do we cock off at the refs? Do we read the singular edition of magazines that we should? Like, how do we approach this? And it's just really fascinating. What you learn when you ask people, hey, what was really going on? But it was actually this photograph. I don't know if you can see it.
Wow.
But that photograph went viral around the world, was seen by hundreds of millions of people after the Super Bowl and for the subsequent years. That was from February 4, 2004, the rainy day in Miami where an African-American head coach played against another African-American head coach. One of them was going to win, but they also were dear friends. And so it was a truly joyous time in my life to be in and around that. And I'll land the plane there. But I say that to say that little book that we ended up writing sold lots of copies. And we're very grateful that the word got out. Thanks for bringing me that encouraging word from your past that connect us here today at just the appointed and anointed time. So good to be with you.
That's right. In this book, The Jersey Effect, and it's beyond the world championship that the Colts won with Tony Dungy at the helm and Peyton Manning and Jeff Saturday and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's interesting because if you read this book, it's very little about the X's and O's of, you know, how to block and how to tackle and how to pass and defense and offense and all that. It's just so much more than that. It's about the people. And I think all sports, right, it's about people. But most people in sports, they care about the performance or the skill set or bigger, faster, stronger. Where here, this book kind of goes through a bunch of different stories of players on that team. And it was so much more than just the on-the-field results. Now, I thought it was cool, Darren, because they actually won the Super Bowl. But it wasn't easy for this team. It took them years to get to that point. What did you learn going through this journey, working with Hunter Smith, the world champion, and Tony Dungy? How did they actually do it? What was that culture that made this organization special?
Yeah. So in the NFL and all pro sports, right, speed, strength, agility, load, explode, drive, those are givens. You have to perform at a high level physically to keep your job. That's just the way it is. However, there are intangibles. It's the coachability quotient, kind of think academic, athletic, social, spiritual, right? Those are the dimensions that Tony and I teach and that we talk about in the book. How do we break it down? And for a pro, it may not be academic in the sense of, hey, I got to get a grade, but it's in the sense of, man, I need to know the playbook. Am I prepared? Because opportunity favors the prepared heart and mind. And notice that I said heart and mind. How do we get right so that we're ready to take the hill even when it's hard, because the other team practices too, Casey. You know, there's very few teams that are not capable of winning. Occasionally there's a team that's, you know, had, it's in disarray, but for the most part, on any given Sunday, if the right conditions are present, either team could win. Now, which team's going to win and which is going to be the most dominant? And that Colts franchise for that little stretch was the winningest team in football. People think it's the Patriots, but actually there was a little stretch, 10 years, where the Colts had just a tremendous run. And Tony was a big part of that, but it was so much more. It was an owner that was aligned. It was Bill Polian that was the general manager. It was Jim Caldwell coming up, Leslie Frazier coming up, right? All the pieces and parts that made for a championship caliber team. But there's no mistaking that a man named Manning was the architect there. He was so disciplined. He went the extra mile, that old opportunity favoring the prepared heart and mind. He was that guy because he was so prepared and ready to go. And then I think couple that on the culture side with hey, you don't win on emotions, you win on execution. This idea that, you know, emotions can be part of it and we're going to execute better than anyone else. And it's amazing when you break it down, especially in a lot of sports. It's not like in Moneyball where everything is predictive, because there are injuries in NFL that make it a little different. Not that there aren't injuries in baseball. There certainly are, but not at the same level. And so you have to have a next man up mentality, so that you're ready when someone goes down, and someone is going to go down. And you see that happening in Cincinnati right now, the quarterback coming up under Joe Burrow. It's incredible what's going on there. You see it happening even with the Colts, with Gardner Minshew. That's how you build a championship culture, and then you just stay after it. But you bake family into the ecosystem. So you can have family Saturday, you can bring your kids to practice, you can have times of the week where you've got Bible study, you've got player study, coaches study, couple study, like all of those things are present. And not every team has that level of discipline when it comes to the spiritual dimensions. And I assure you, friend, that that was present in the middle of the Colts. And there are many other teams that do, and I won't go into a tell-all mode in that case, but there's a lot of goodness that can be learned from that Colts championship season, which was the 06 season. Pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of things to kind of say, all right, how do I take what they did and implement that in my own life or in my own business, or if you're a baseball coach or leading a program? But I think the family thing's important. I was reading in there Clyde Christensen. He was talking about three things that he focused on. Prioritized family was number one. And it sounds like that organization did that by doing those things that you just mentioned, which is family Saturdays and some of that kind of stuff. Because you're right, like, why work so hard? You're working hard to provide for your family. But if you're just working hard, no matter if you're an athlete or a business owner, but you're not spending time with your family, like, what's the point? But there is a tension there, it feels like, especially probably as a professional athlete or even any kind of leader. Am I at home or am I at work? Like, what does that look like? How have you found to, you know, balance that tension?
Super hard. You know, I think it's all in when you're all in. What I mean is, like, when you're at work, be all in. When you're at home, be all in. Like, don't be clicking through the games. You know, like, when you're home, like, be present, be intentional. And I don't want to sound, you know, like trite in my answer, because like I don't have it figured out perfectly, you guys. I've got four nearly grown kids and an amazing wife, and I have a support system that I nurtured because I need that to hold me accountable. You know, a passionate guy out doing it. You know, you're a passionate guy. These leaders, like, they need people around them to keep them accountable. And family is the most important earthly priority. And when you get that right, because that's God's first institution, the family, and you get that right and you've got that prioritization for that higher calling around the spiritual dimension, ooh, man, you can make greatness happen. And even when you lose, even when you're not the starting quarterback, I tell a story in the book about a player that prepared, who had a long career. His name is Dylan Gandy, but he didn't get in the game. He prepared, but he didn't get in the Super Bowl. He was on the team. He's got a ring. He's part of the team. But he didn't get in the game. How do you feel? Like, this idea of even Dylan Gandy is a champion. For real. And then he went on to do really, really well with the Detroit Lions. And God love him, man. He's a dear friend. And, you know, all the things that we do in the world, FCA and AIA and Impact, and he gets us. And that's all a natural byproduct of being around people that want to build championship culture and do it in every aspect of their life. All in, all in.
Yeah. That's so good. And, you know, another part of that championship winning team, and there was a chapter on Jeff Saturday, and you said you were spending some time with him earlier today. And he mentioned in there that success, and I think it kind of hit him after they won the Super Bowl, because with success comes opportunity, and almost too many opportunities for a lot of people. And it's interesting. I heard this the other day. Yeah. Nobody really teaches you how to handle success. Sometimes they teach you how to handle failure, but not often do you know how to. I'm successful. Yeah. Now what do I do? Now what? Because all these things came at him. He mentioned in here about car dealership opportunities and restaurant opportunities.
Chevrolet.
That's it. So what did you learn from talking with him? Because he was a guy that people liked and admired and respected, and then new things got thrown his way. What did you learn from your relationship with Jeff?
First of all, he's super cerebral and way smarter than me. So I just got to give him those props. Not that Tony and others aren't, but there is transcendent mental capacities of some of these players. And that's often true with offensive linemen, especially centers. It's a really hard position. So I just give you that. So he's super smart. Like, he's low man wins. He's not a big fellow. Today, I'm probably way more than Jeff right now, because he's in super good shape down in Buford, Georgia, living good life, like focused in on family and values. But I say all that to say, right after this all happened, you know, after every ball game, they meet at St. Elmo's, like they're having expensive steak dinners and all this stuff. And people are like, I could name an auto dealership after you. And he's like, ooh, that'd be kind of cool. Saturday Chevrolet, like that. But what he realized was, man, with that comes weight. With that, you got to go to board meetings. You got to pay attention. You got to look at balance sheets. You like got to do stuff. And oh, by the way, what if it doesn't go well? And man, I can tell you countless, and I am not exaggerating, countless stories about guys, not just of the Colts, but that, you know, try to be investors and entrepreneurs, and they should. I'm not diminishing guys' abilities to do that, but man, you can get off base, and it can bring a lot of social and emotional unrest, but your side business ventures aren't going well. So it's a testament to him that he stayed very focused on what he was doing, a couple of charitable causes, and his church and his family. And so Karen would tell you, his wife, man, what a great husband, right? A great man and a great father. And isn't that how you want to be remembered, Casey? You know, when it's all over, like, oh, the best podcast host of all time, like whatever it is, like, yeah, but I want to be Darren Gray, a man of integrity, a man who prioritized his family and he loved his friends. You know, and somewhere in there, I think when you get that, you can build those kind of cultures in all of your ecosystems. And that's why I love these kind of meaningful podcasts that we're doing today, to really get people to think about how to do that part of their life better.
That's so good. And I'm working with a bunch of high school athletes right now, and I'm helping them craft, like, what's my vision? What do I want to be remembered for when my career is done at this school? What do I want people to say about me? And I haven't had any athletes. These are high school athletes that are very, like, win-driven, batting average-driven, touchdown-driven, like stats, performance. They're typically not even going there, right? They're saying, hey, I want my teammates to say I was a great teammate. I had their back. I pushed others to be the best version of themselves. But here's the problem, Darren, and how do we solve this issue? Because the world's telling them, you got to win the state championship. All right, you got to set the record. You got to get the college scholarship. When the kids, the athletes are like, man, I just want to have a great time, and I want to have great friends, and I want to push each other, and I want to be pushed, and yeah, I want to win, but it's all these other things. But the world's saying performance, performance, and performance. So how do you balance that tension of what I really want, but what the world is wanting of me? It is kind of rough and tough sometimes.
By serving an audience of one, the real answer lies beyond the world's applause. The real answer lies with this concept that you hear guys like Carson Wentz and others talking about. I serve an audience of one. I do not play for the world's applause. I know that there's victory beyond competition. I'm going to compete at the highest levels, and I'm going to be excellent. I'm going to train. I'm going to do everything possible to set myself up to be a great competitor and a great athlete. However, You know, you can only control what you can control. And so when you get that, it takes all the pressure off. And so a lot of people don't get that in business because they put so much self-induced pressure on themselves. But ultimately, like, God is in charge of the outcomes. Our job is to do things the right way repeatedly, the little things that make a big difference over the long period, right? Extraordinary leaders aren't extraordinary because they do extraordinary things. It's because they do the ordinary things better than anyone else more frequently. And when you start to get that, like, man, okay, what can I control today? What do I need to do? And then have a relentless pursuit to know that, man, these outcomes, they're really better placed in God's hands. And then I can relax a little bit more. I call it, I'll land it here, to be at peace, but at a pace. Stay with me. At peace, like, can I be at peace and, like, not be wound up all the time, but can I do it at a pace, right, that God would expect a high capacity leader to do it at? He expects more from us. To whom much is given, much is expected. And we need to keep a pace to touch a lot of those athletes, to connect with their hearts, to use media, to touch CEOs, high capacity people. But when you can be at peace at a pace, I believe that you can do the Lord's work in ways that, you know, can be mind blowing sometimes.
That's so good. So what are those ordinary things or those habits that you have in your life that you're trying to stay focused on? Because you mentioned it here. It's not doing the extraordinary. It's doing the ordinary things, but doing them really well and consistent. What are those ordinary things that any leader needs to make sure they master if they really do want to reach their fullest potential?
Let me give you, I have my phone set up. Usually I wake up anyway, right? But if I need an alarm, boom, it happens. My first alert is Bible app. First one every single day. So it sets my mind like, hey, you know, 6 out of 7 days, there you go. The next one, as I have this crazy little prayer routine that I do around the prayer of Jabez that I've been doing for over 30 years. It's a biblical story about a man named Jabez that prayed for abundant blessing on his family, that the Lord would remove obstacles from his path, that the Lord would be with him, the hand of God would be with him each day so that he could have influence on those around him. Blessing, influence, removal of evil, not for the sake of having an easy life. It wasn't that Jabez wanted an easy life. What he wanted was to have this you call the flow state. You know, yeah, we're in flow state right now, I think, right? Here we go. Boom. And when you have those four things, and I have that little ritual around that prayer each day, it just sets my mind right. And I don't get it right, man. I get it wrong so much of the time. But with that daily biblical, the daily prayer, and then this idea that I know what my objectives are today, and I have a lot of good people around me, but I've also had a lot of really good role models, including my dad, including other people. So I've had a lot of advantages, and I'm very grateful for that, because not everybody does, Casey. A lot of people come from not intact families or dysfunctional ecosystems, dysfunctional schools, you know, shell casings. When I walk in my neighborhood at the Kennedy King Park, a block and a half from here, I mean, almost every time I see shell casings on the ground. And so I don't say that. I'm not intending to be party to that. However, I'm mindful that other coping mechanisms, power, if I have a gun, whatever. And so how do we begin to de-escalate all that in ordinary ways? And you know what it looks like? Today at Bible study, I'll make it so real. I walked into Bible study with a really big one. It's 30 different churches that come together every Friday in Indianapolis. And by the way, it's open. Any of you ever in Indianapolis and you want to come, just hit me on LinkedIn and we'll get you plugged into it Friday morning, 7:15 a.m. However, there was a man that looked different than me. He had brown skin. He was standing in the back of the room. He was looking around. He walked in the door, and I got there early today because I was receiving a couple of the guests. And the first thing I did, I didn't look for my own guests because I knew they'd be okay. They're good. And I stopped and I said, hey, man, I'm so glad you're here. And he thanked me for it. But this idea, prioritize people. Do we do it or do we not? It's binary. Do we do it or do we not? Because people preference themselves all the time. They preference themselves in the grocery line. They preference themselves in their car. And I'm not calling out privilege as innately bad, but when it comes at the price of another, it's suboptimal. And so how do we continue to optimize by being present for people? And I call that the ministry of availability. There were other people in the room I actually might have preferred to talk to. I don't. But in that moment, I prioritize that man. I guarantee he'll be back next Friday. Not because of me, because of God. And so I give you that back to say, how can we be more like that to answer your question? How can we pray more? How can we be in the Word more? How can we prioritize people more? I think when we do that, that actually is what it means to be a Jesus follower. And hopefully I can reflect that.
What do you say? Pray in the Word and be
in
there
a word,
for people.
And do it with your Bible app, because that's at your fingertips. You're not going to be walking around with your study. My study Bible's all torn up in the best possible ways. Like a well-worn Bible is good. But get it on your app. Prioritize your prayer. Like, get it somewhere in your system. I do it in the mornings. Other people do it differently. I pray all the time. But, you know, my concentrated prayer around the prayer of Jabez. And then prioritize people. When you get that right, you know, that's at least 10% of the battle. It's your tithe and your offering, in a way, unto the Lord. And then we can just have fun and take the pressure off and see what God's got in store for us today.
So why is it so hard when you do wake up? Because, you know, I've had moments of my life where I am doing those things that I need to do. I got a little habit and routine now where I wake up every day. I jump in this 42-degree cold tub, which I don't know if you've ever done one of those, Darren. Have you done one of those?
I've got friends that own such places, and I should, you know, it's like as we optimize our health and start hacking into higher levels of well-being, I know the power, and the answer is I haven't, but I would.
I'm doing it, honestly, because I had an accountability partner that told me, you can't do it. You're too soft. So it kind of gave me that little challenge, and we were talking about accountability, and I'm like, well, I got to do it now kind of thing. But anyway, that's my routine now, where I jump in that cold tub, right? I kind of attack something that I don't want to do first thing in the morning. And then I do get into the Word and renew my mind. But there was weeks and months, I would say, Darren, that it was, okay, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to look at my email list and figure out, all right, well, what do I got to do today? And then I check my portfolios and see how they're performing. And then I check social media. And then I get into that comparison trap. It's so hard. And it's an easy fade for people to go from a good routine to a bad routine. And I do think what you mentioned earlier, having that accountability partner is key, because you're right. If you can be open and honest with somebody, develop some key habits that you need to stick to, and then allow somebody to speak into your life if you're not doing those, I think that's really key. Would you agree?
I absolutely agree.
So let's talk about some of the things that you're working on. You got the Super Bowl breakfast, which is super cool. I remember watching the Netflix show with Kirk Cousins. I think it was one of his episodes, and all of a sudden you're right there with him, and you've had some
episode
good moments
eight.
There.
Let's
episode
go.
Eight. You know, he said some pretty cool things during his speech last year at the Super Bowl breakfast. What do you remember about that talk? And then talk about what you're doing there with the Super Bowl breakfast, and you got the All-Star breakfast and some of that kind of stuff. So talk about what you heard last year from him, and then two, what's your involvement in that?
I can talk about what he did, but you can go watch it. Like, just go to athletesinaction.com, listen to Kirk Cousins. It's amazing. It's been shared tens of millions of times by so many ministries. Like, in the earthly world, they would say poaching. I call it sharing. Where, you know, we just let other ministries use it because it's the evangelical heart of what we do with the Bart Starr Award, which is one of only five NFL-sanctioned events. So blessed to be able to co-produce into that event. Tony Dungy and Mike Singletary and Anthony Munoz, like, it doesn't even make sense why I get to do these things along with Corwin Anthony, the Athletes in Action staff, all the others. But what's really interesting to me is, how did Kirk Cousins even get there? He got there because a couple of years before, somebody came to my Bible study today, not the one I was talking with earlier, is the son of somebody else famous. It doesn't even matter who he is. But the point is, he was there with me today, and his ex-wife used to be Kirk's publicist, and she had been my friend from another circumstance. And she had said, oh, yeah, I'll get Kirk there. So God works out all – you can't make that stuff up. Like, it's too crazy. And God orchestrates all that. And then Kirk came 5 years ago down in Atlanta. He just said, hey, I just want to come. I want to be present. Man, the last three seasons, his numbers are ridiculous. Like, they stack up against any QB in the league. And even though they haven't won the big, big game, he's quite a quarterback. And so there's a Bart Starr Award process that we have to go through. You can't win early in your career. You can only win late in your career. And that's the way Bart Starr set it up. It's like, you got to be a veteran. You got to be a man of character. The man about the community, a man about your family. And when you represent all that, and then it's voted on by the players. And so Kirk had to pay his dues. He wasn't even on the ballot then. But yet he came and he participated. He lent his time and energy. And yet, years later, boom, he became known as that man. And it's his peers in the NFL, right? Think about the other quarterbacks, running backs across the league, right? These 1,500 or so guys that vote him in. And we just go, praise God. Like, I don't have control over that. Like, that's just the natural byproduct of him doing the things the right way. And so he comes in, he shares this beautiful message about faith and hope and how legacy is really grounded in Christ. And I had just been up to his home a couple of weeks before filming essentially a documentary piece on him that aired on CBS all over the nation around the program. We called it the Bart Starr Award Special. You can find that online too if you want to see some of the rest of his story. But then that kind of gave even more notoriety, and boom, then, you know, Netflix and NFL Films, who were filming at my, I had the wherewithal to get to them. I've got a call with them on Monday along with my colleagues, but had the wherewithal to get with them in advance, sell through the story. I'm not saying I was responsible. I certainly wasn't, but they had that content in the can. He then was selected to be able to be on that show. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes and he together made a pretty good tango. And then I think there was a little bit of Mariota in there too in the early part of it. It was really interesting and touched a lot of people. But the gospel being transmitted through Netflix, come on, man. Like, who gets to do that? That is a high calling beyond measure. And so I just go, okay, Lord, how can I just continue to bring forward these men of honor, of hope, of character, the DeMario Davises of the world, you know, these guys that are just so good, love God, and are willing to speak out just when it happens. And then I have programs. There's three events. One is at the Super Bowl, one is at the NBA All-Star Weekend, and one is at the NCAA Weekend. Those are all productions of Athletes in Action, which is a division of Campus Crusade for Christ. So I have a retained action in and around those because I produce, I do media, I do lots of things. None of that matters from an earthly perspective. It's a lot of work is what it is, but it allows me to have a measure of influence. And then what I do by day is I work in the He Gets Us campaign. This campaign that some of your viewers and listeners will have heard on Super Bowl spots and lots of visibility inside sports leagues across the country, the Cowboys, the Chargers, the Colts, the Bronco, like all these. So I help to guide and lead, not all of it because it's a giant campaign, but I have a significant role in the midst of that. I'm blessed to. So I'm raising friends and funds to help advance that campaign so that we can bring more and more people into the kingdom. And it's the single most sophisticated campaign for Christ in the history of the postmodern world. I'll say it again. It's the single most sophisticated campaign for Christ in the history of the postmodern world. And the only reason I put postmodern in there is because I think in its day, Billy Graham Crusade, in its day, Promise Keepers. But now I'll put this campaign up in the data back end and how we actually are connecting people, real people, using key intelligences, data, online traffic through to community, prayer, and church. Would you like more prayer? How can I pray for you? Hey, you want to come be part of our community in a volunteer event, like even the ones that I have? And then finally, hey, would you ever think about coming back to church? Because I tell you what, Casey, 18 to 30 year olds, which is the target of the campaign, they're not coming back to church otherwise, as a general rule. I mean, you know, they might pop in and pop out, but this is the most systematic thing that I've ever seen. And I'm blessed as a sports ministry leader. I call it sports media ministry. And in the middle of all that, God allows me to use my higher purposes to touch people. And it's an honor to do it and to be with guys like you today that are willing to help extend that message, connect people. They can find me at Darren Gray 2020. They can hit me on LinkedIn, you know, connect if they want to, you know, be involved as a partner or lean in to get their church. All of your churches are welcome to participate and we'll get you a scholarship. There's a nominal fee, but we'll scholarship you in, and it's called HeGetsUsPartners.com. And then your church can receive the explorers that hit the campaign through the national advertising. But I tell you, the next iteration is the ground game in local cities where we're using sports teams and we're using local SCA chapters, local Young Life chapters to actually receive people that come into the campaign. It's so good. I've never seen anything like it. And I'm just an honor to be able to be a part of that. So, man, check it out. And if you like it, tweet about it, have fun with it, And we'll just continue to give all praise and glory to God, because it's not us. It's way bigger than any of us. But we know that it's making a difference, because I've seen the numbers, Casey, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. And over six, I'll land it here, last year, over 6,000 people were removed from a bad cycle around suicidal ideation. We got them the help that they need. It's measurable. Like, it's through a partner ministry called Death to Life, where we're helping people in their time of great need. And we're not celebrating that from a traditional sense. That's horrible that people would be in a depressed, suicidal ideation or activation mode. But what we can do as a He Gets Us campaign is meet them where they are and ask them to get into community. We can ask them to pray, and we can ask them for church. And it's imperfect, because we're all flawed and perfect people, but we're trained in these modes. I mean, an ordained pastor myself and others, like we have ways to lead people in. So please invite people, your listeners and others. This movement is taking root, and it's going to go on for years to come. We need support, and yet we will support those in need, and we love the opportunity to do it.
It's awesome. Well, we're going to make sure we put all of those links in the show notes. So thank you for that. And, you know, yes, I want to get you out of here on this. I actually shared this at a men's event that I spoke at. I think I told you this a couple months ago when we initially met. Story in your book here. So make sure you get a copy of The Jersey Effect. And bear with me here, but it's out of Exodus 13, 17 through 22. And this was the message the chaplain, Eric Simpson, delivered the night before the Super Bowl to the Indianapolis Colts. He said, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not leave them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt armed for the battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, because Joseph had made the sons of Israel swear an oath. He said, God will surely come to your aid. And then you must carry my bones up with you from this place. After leaving, they camped on the edge of the desert. By day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night, in a pillar of fire to guide them by light, so they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar by fire by night left its place in front of the people. So the Israelites could have had the direct shot to their destination, the easiest route. But then God led the people around by the desert toward the Red Sea, the longest route. Sometimes our God is the Lord of the longest route, which I thought was amazing, because he said the team's just sitting there, and in 2005 was their best year and they lost. And he said every team would have told them that, but God took that team the longest route because he wasn't concerned with them winning the Super Bowl. He wasn't. God was concerned with the kind of people they would be when they did win.
That's good. Who wrote that?
Somebody famous.
It was good, you guys. That just trying to understand and make sense of it. Eric is still the chaplain of the Colts. He's a dear friend, and I just ran a big activation with him. We had 5,000 people stay after the Colts game the other day to like come down and to worship and to hear testimony from players and to be encouraged. And many gave their lives back to Christ that day. It was amazing. And Eric is in the middle of that. So how do we get from here to there? We just stay faithful, right? We work the plan. We get prepared. We are part of a team. That's a painting back here using pointillism and, you know, what was going on. You know, Tony would tell you, look, they weren't all believers in Jesus Christ, but they all believed in the system, the higher calling, but there was a purposefulness about what they were trying to accomplish. And in 05, I mean, it was a tough out to the Pittsburgh Steelers, but just prior to that, you know, in the playoffs, but it was a tough out because Tony's son died. And so there was a lot of things going on. But for Tony to say, with his great Buccaneers, he had a couple of teams at the Bucs that were really good too, and then a couple of Colts teams that were really special. That 05 team was the best team, but it didn't make it all the way there. And that longer route made it even more worthwhile. It made it so special, like there was heart that transpired. And we'll wrap it with where we started with that little photograph. And that happened in the locker room right after the Colts game, when people could have been, you know, popping champagne and doing all that. And there was plenty of revelry and fun. But there was one guy in the locker room who said to Tony, shouldn't we end the season, this game, the same way that we did every other season? And Tony said, there's no way. Look around. There's cameras everywhere. And I'm not doing it if there's cameras in here, because then it would look like we're doing it for the cameras. And so that person went and cleared the room of all cameras. And thankfully, one person broke the rules from the Associated Press. We appreciate that singular photograph, but there was no video. You know, this is just in the spiritual ether that set the course for the really special memories that really fuel all of us that believe that there's a big God that can lead us to a big outcomes if we're willing to do the little things like stop and pray at the end of every game. No, every game. You mean even the Super Bowl when we're busy and we could be on the book? Yep, even that game. And when you think back to what Tony had been doing just a few minutes before, hoisting a trophy, right, on the big thing, and Jim Nance has got the mic in his face and all that, and yet we're going to be faithful. We're going to stop and give glory. And it's a real testament to a bunch of men that came together for such a time as this, their little Esther moment, to say, you know what? We're going to give all glory, praise, and honor to the Lord. And when that happens, greatness happens. But here's the teaching. It can happen in your business, can happen in your homes, can happen in your media outlets, on your sports teams, on your youth teams. And quit waiting for the chaplain to show up and bring the spiritually ordered nature to your teams. Congratulations. Go get yourself certified, right? Go to Athletes in Action. You know, get the resources that you need. Become an equipped, multiplying, disciple-making chaplain, sports ministry leader. Bring it into your own spaces and places, and then just keep telling the stories that there is good news in this Advent season right now. Advent is that preparation for great things to come, and that's the good news, the great things that came through Jesus. And here we are today having fellowship around a stick and a ball, tossing a football, and sports, media, and mission. So it's an honor to have been here with you today and be part. I can't wait to continue to follow you and see you in action. And if there's anything I can do to be useful or helpful, you please let me know, because the ministry of availability applies in all kinds of different ways. So appreciate what you're doing too, to bring the light and the salt.
This is it, Darren. Amazing. Blown away with our time here today. Super impactful. Thank you so much for being a guest in the show, and we'll talk soon. Dugout Nation, Darren Gray, what an awesome time. Here are the big three takeaways that I took from Darren. Number one, be careful what you say yes to. Each yes could mean success, yes, but also it could mean wait. And what do you want? Figuring out where do you ultimately want to go and asking yourself, if you say yes to this, will it help you get there? Do ordinary things better than the rest. Create good habits. Morning prayer time, positive reading, and habits are going to help you take what's possible and make it reality. So what are your habits? Do you check your email first thing in the morning? Do you check your to-do list? Do you read social media? Do you get in that comparison trap? Or do you have habits to start your day the right way? And number three, it doesn't matter what you accomplish. It matters who you become. Focus on who you're becoming rather than what you're accomplishing. And the only person you should compare yourself to is the previous version of yourself. Thank you for joining us once more for another episode of The Dugout CEO. We want to get you the tips you need to become an MVP at what you do. Sign up for our Friday Focus newsletter and you'll receive a valuable tip each Friday morning to help you build the business and life you want. You can sign up by going to caseycavell.com or click the link in the show notes. And make sure to hit the subscribe button so you get notification on our next episode. And one way you can help us book more great guests like this is to please leave us a rating and honest review in the Apple or Spotify podcasting app.